In the name of God, the Creator who made us, our Redeemer who loves us, and the Spirit who won't let us go. Amen. In our time, we can easily live inside carefully constructed worlds of algorithms that feed us the news that we already agree with. Social media that connects us mostly to people who share our outlook. Before long, we find ourselves surrounded by voices that reinforce what we already believe and rarely challenged by views that differ from our own. But long before algorithms or social media existed, we were already learning where the lines are. Many of those boundaries were absorbed early in life, sometimes spoken out loud by family or friends, sometimes simply implied. The wrong neighborhood, the wrong color skin, the wrong gender, the wrong sexual orientation, the wrong side of the political aisle, the wrong table in the cafeteria, the wrong kind of reputation that marks someone as an undesirable kind of person. Over time, we internalize these social constructs and believe that our cultural survival depends on recognizing the boundaries and staying on the right side of them. Jesus was raised in a very exclusive community and religion where clear lines of division were set for the survival of the Jews. Folks were either in or out. It was only natural for Jesus to reflect the traditions and teachings of his upbringing because Jesus, fully human, was continually learning about who he was. He was also led to change. In this gospel story, Jesus would not respond initially to the Canaanite woman because she clearly was an outsider. The disciples were also saying, "Send her away because she keeps shouting after us." They want Jesus to get rid of her and her embarrassing presence. The issue is that she is a Canaanite. They are people who worship many gods, as was common in the Roman Empire. And ritual laws of cleanliness, so important to the Jewish people, are not practiced. She's a Gentile. A Gentile. Anyone who is not a Jew. An outsider and untouchable for the Jews. And Jesus has just come from Nazareth, his hometown, where friends and family have doubted his authority and were offended at his teachings. He's upset because he has received word that John has been beheaded and has tried to withdraw from the crowds for a while, likely to have some time to grieve for his friend John. But the crowds have followed him. He's fed the 5,000 plus, calmed the storm at sea, seen Peter's efforts to cross the water ruined by Peter's fear and doubt. Everywhere there is need and people want something from him but remain blind as to who he was. He's just tired. He's just tired. Perhaps it's not hard to imagine how that feels, to be surrounded by appetites, by people who want your money and time and gifts, but aren't much interested in who you really are, to be confused about what you're supposed to do, how much you're supposed to give, and to be worried about whether or not there's enough of you to go around. The Canaanite woman comes crying to him to heal her daughter, but this one does something different. She calls him by name. "Oh Lord, Son of David." That title is reserved for the Messiah, and his own people have failed to recognize it. It must hurt deeply to hear this coming from someone from whom he least wants to hear it. So he draws the line. So what if she called him by name? He will not waste his energy on this Gentile woman while his own people, the Jews, go wanting. "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," he says to the woman. In other words, my mission is only to the Jews. But the woman will not stay on her side of the line. Kneeling at his feet, she says, "Lord, help me." Jesus has dismissed her, but she will not be dismissed. She's gotten her foot in the door before Jesus can close it in her face. And she shows no sign of leaving before he has dealt with her. "Lord, help me, she says. Can't she hear? He's told her no. He told her that she's not one of his sheep. But she seems not to have gotten the message, so he says it again, louder and clearer than before. It is not fair to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs, he says. A very cruel rebuff to her, to say the least. But the Canaanite woman simply will not budge. Yes, Lord, she says, when he calls her a dog. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. When she says that, something inside Jesus snaps. Something in him is changed forever, and you can hear it in his voice. O woman, great is your faith, he says to her. Be it done for you as you desire. And her daughter is healed instantly. Jesus comes to a new understanding of who he is and what it is that he's been called to do. He's no longer a Messiah called only to the lost sheep of Israel, but God's chosen Redeemer of the whole world, Jews and Gentiles alike, beginning with this Canaanite woman. Through her faith, he learns that God's purpose for him is bigger than he had imagined, that there is enough of him to go around. And in that moment, there is no going back to the limits he observed even a moment before. The old boundaries will not contain his new vision. There's no more safety or certainty for him, or guarding against loss, or hanging on to his cherished notions about the way things ought to be. Her faith works like a lever on him, opening his arms wider and wider until there is room for them in them for the whole world, until he allows them to be nailed upon the cross. We Christians who know about the merciful, generous God are the ones who must shatter the little categories that limit God's generosity. And three things I'd like for you to carry with you this morning. The first is this. There are groups that call themselves Christian. Among them, we recognize names, the KKK, the Christian Nationalists, who proclaim religious morality, dismissing everyone of whom they disapprove, deciding who's worthy of God's love and mercy, teaching hate, which is the antithesis of Jesus and his teachings. They lead us to a deeper division of haves and have-nots, diminishing our capacity for compassion and making social care a liberal idea. With social advances of the last decades seemingly under attack, it seems we're in a time when winning means more than the well-being of all of us human beings created in God's image. But Jesus asserts that God's generosity requires us to look again, become more aware, so that we can escape these comfortable little categories which keep us slotted in hostility. Second, Jesus teaches us what it means to love our neighbor. And it turns out, folks, that loving our neighbor is harder than it sounds, because it means loving the neighbor we didn't choose, the one who makes us uncomfortable, the one our world has told us is beyond the pale. Jesus doesn't just tell us to love people who are like us or to be kind only to those with whom we already share something in common. He shows us by the way he lives that every boundary we erect to keep certain people out, every wall of class or religion or reputation, is a boundary that he is prepared to cross, not reluctantly, but eagerly, because he knows it is God's own self, a human being made in God's image, who waits for us on the other side. This is not easy. It requires us to examine honestly the invisible rules we follow about who deserves our time and attention, who's worth the risk, whose story we are willing to hear. But Jesus is clear. The love of God does not respect the lines we draw. And if we're serious about following him, neither can we. The third thing I want you to take with you today is this. The living Christ wants nothing more than to reach us. The same Jesus who crossed every social and religious barrier to care for this Gentile woman in the depths of her despair is still crossing lines to find us. He wants to touch that place in our heart that we keep hidden, the things we are most ashamed of, the wound we have stopped believing anyone can heal. He wants to reach us where we feel most guilty and help us to accept the forgiveness he has already given to us on the cross. He wants to meet us in our deepest need. In today's gospel, Jesus tramples one of the deepest dividing lines in his world and debates with and responds to the Canaanite woman as she asks for healing for her daughter. The truth is that Jesus understood the rules perfectly well. After this encounter, he simply refused to be governed by them because he knew something that the boundary keepers of his day did not. He knew that all of us, no matter how righteous we appear on the outside, fall short of the glory of God. He knew that all of us are broken in ways that we would rather not admit. And that all of us are in deep need of accepting God's love and forgiveness. And because that is true for everyone, no one gets to stand outside the circle of his concern. That's what the Canaanite woman taught Jesus that day. God's call to us means pushing old boundaries, embracing outsiders, giving up the notion that there's not enough of us to go around. We may resist, but the gifts and call of God are irrevocable, as Paul says. That call of God is as insistent as the Canaanite woman who came asking for help and simply would not leave Jesus alone until she left, having found something for which she had dared to hope. So hear this and remember it. The gospel of Jesus lives and moves us to step over the boundaries we've drawn for ourselves. The love of God is unmotivated and undeserved as the sunrise, and it goes out to everyone. That's the crazy and marvelous thing Jesus learned, lived, and tells us. That's the good news, folks, that we can rely on. Amen.